John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning on this Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a good day as we get into the first week now officially over in the National Football League and lots of interesting developments. I mean, boy, what a dud by the Oakland Raiders. I mean, 13-13 first half, then all of a sudden, they just ran out of gas. So we'll get into that. We'll get into the injuries. Lots of stuff happening in the National Football League. All that's coming up, but let's get started with the five biggest stories of the day. And the top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
He got hurt. He got hurt. Well, there isn't anybody tougher than him. And if you can come back, he'll come back.
That's Pete Carroll talking about Doug Baldwin, who has a partial tear, a second-degree tear of the MCL, according to Adam Schefter. And so, remember, this is not on his right knee, which was a problem. This is, well, he already had the left knee problem. Now he has the right knee problem. And so now it comes down to, when is he going to come back? Because now you take away a Pro Bowl receiver. You take away the main weapon right now as far as a passing target for Russell Wilson. And there's no doubt that has to hurt. Now, I would have to think that MCLs, if it was a third degree, it would be 4 to 6 weeks. If it's going to be a second degree, probably, and this is a tear, so I'd say 2 to 4 weeks. Again, hard to judge some of these things. We already know that it was taking KJ Wright probably about the same amount of time to get back from his injury. But another big one. Now, Carroll did say on Brock and Salk yesterday that KJ Wright is starting to run again, but it would be a miraculous return if he's going to be on the field Monday night. So that's another Pro Bowl player that's going to be out of the mix. As far as DJ Fluker, trying to make sure that they don't get him back too fast, and that's something that they're not trying to rush. They liked what they saw of J.R. Sweezy. Of course, J.R. Sweezy having very little time on the practice field since signing with the Seahawks. And that's the thing, I think, when you look on the big picture. I mean, you look at the big picture, I mean, there was so much that was so questioned. And again, that's what I wrote about last week. How many questions this team had going in? And it's not like they don't have the answers. It's just that you may not have the immediate ability to get those answers figured out. Because you think about the fact that they had three key guys that were on the field with significant roles that really didn't have any training camp for the most part. J.R. Sweezy was not on the field for training camp. Earl Thomas came in, did a very good job over, what, 60-some plays or so, and did some very good things there. I mean, so he didn't have much time on the field. And so, you know, you've got all those things trying to come in there and trying to get that. And then, of course, they had six rookies, or in the case of a first-year vet that, you know, was out there for 25 or more plays. That's the lot to ask. And so with so many things in question, Deion Jordan, of course, going out there for 15 plays, he didn't have a training camp, and he only had maybe about two practices. So, I mean, it should get better this week. They resume practice on Thursday, and right now we'll see where it is, and we're going to ask you probably to see what things that you're most concerned about with this Seahawk team right now. They're 0-1 with a road game coming up against the Chicago Bears.
Number two.
What went wrong in the running game?
We didn't do it enough. We didn't do it enough. And that goes back to, I'll always tell you, that goes back to we didn't convert on third down, so then you're off the field and you don't get to use your the ready list that you have. You know, we didn't get through. We ran the ball six times in the first half. We had, how many plays? We had 16 plays?
16 runs, I believe. Right?
Yeah, but I think there was
15 in the first half.
15 plays in the first half. You know, that's not enough to even, you can't figure it out.
So I can appreciate that, but I got to follow up and say, why come out and throw the ball twice to start the game? Why third and inches? Is it a passing play? I mean, there were some other opportunities to run the ball, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes, all of that.
So Pete Carroll now is talking about what we saw so much last year, although here's where the difference was. At least Russell Wilson earlier in the game was able to get touchdown drives. He was able to get great plays to Will Disley, was able to get great plays to good plays over to Brandon Marshall. But he's right, only 15 running plays, 7 each to Rashad Penny and Chris Carson. They've got to try to have more of a commitment to run the football. And, you know, Pete's right about this. I mean, yeah, it's nice to say you want to run the football, but if you have three and outs and you have third and longs and all those different things, I mean, you're not going to be in a position. But I have to think that coming up this week, they've got to find a way to try to make sure that they run the football a little bit better. I mean, I'm sure that the conversion right now with, you know, there was a worry with Von Miller out there and certainly Bradley Chubb, you know, two pass rushers, and so they were in two tight end sets a lot. You know, they need to kind of get back into figuring out, okay, what does this team need to do to try to concentrate on the run and do the things that they were doing in the preseason? That's going to be the challenge, and it's got to get better.
Number three.
We got a lot of games left to play. Certainly, we've had some highs. We've had some lows throughout this season. Key is just show up every day ready to play, no matter who's in the lineup. And we will, shift it around a little bit, keep some guys fresh, give some of the younger guys or the newer guys a chance to play a little bit. And hopefully it works to our advantage.
And we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Well, Marco Gonzalez is going to be on the mound tonight as his team 7.5 games behind as far as where it goes. And you start to even think now the magic number, I believe, when I was thinking about it yesterday, was probably about 15 for the A's to clinch that wild card. And when you go 15, there's 19 games left. And so a combination of a Mariner loss and a Oakland A's win, and all of a sudden it starts to keep going down. So there's 15 combinations of that. As we start to get into the countdown, and I think when you looked at FanGraphs, I think there was only like about a 1% chance of making the playoffs. But they still fight out there, see what they can do, and this is the easy part of their schedule. 13 of the 19 games, I believe they still remain, are going to be against teams with losing records, so maybe they can get on a little bit of a hot streak. But they're 79-64. They're 7.5 games back, and the Padres, which of course I think one of the most damaging things that happened back at the end of August, swept the Mariners. Worst team in the National League, and they swept the Mariners. So as we look to the roster and see what's going to happen today, I think there's going to be a couple players added today from Arkansas. Triple-A Arkansas season ended, so Kyle Lewis might be up, and so that'll be there. And, of course, we'll check with Shannon Dreyer at 10:30, and that's Around the Diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number four.
Rodney Hudson pushing him.
Well, the beast mode was able to get a nice touchdown run, a typical beast mode touchdown run. They gave him a 13-10 lead in the first half, but everything evaporated. Second half, Raiders did not show up. They just kind of ran out of gas, and they ended up getting a 33-13 loss to the L.A. Rams. And I think it's a byproduct of not playing in the preseason. I mean, you saw the Rams struggling in the first half. You saw the Raiders struggling in the second half. All those different things. 33-13. Rams get the easy victory in the second half. Then you got the Jets. I don't know why my voice is all caught up here. Jets played a pretty good game against the Detroit Lions. Good game for Sam Darnold. He's the youngest starting quarterback in the modern era at the age of 20 years old. And he was able to get a 48-17 victory. Big story in that game. It was so predictable. Apparently, the Jets players knew all the plays the Lions were going to run. That's not good. I mean, they were able to figure out just about everything. They get 4 interceptions in that game. And so I think you have to number. You get new coaches coming in there, and new coach in Matt Patricia. And even though he's got his same Jim Bob Cooter as offensive coordinator, the Jets seem to know everything the Lions were doing. That's something that Matt Patricia's got to fix up. So bad loss. In fact, it was one of the worst losses for the Lions you can ever have. Matt Stafford, of course, should have been able to outduel Sam Bradford. He ends up losing by 31 points.
Number five.
Well, they're a good offensive football team. They got the opening drive. I think they went right down the field, and they were impressive. They had balance today. They could run it and throw it, and they proved their stuff, I think, tonight in the second half. And offensively, we couldn't get anything going. We turned the ball over. We failed to pick up a blitz one time. Very disappointing.
And it should be disappointing because the Raiders end up losing by 20 points to the Rams, giving up unanswered points in the second half. And how about this stat? 7 new coaches in the league, including the $100 million John Gruden, and they all lost. 0-7. Worst group of head coach starts in NFL history. The previous one was 2001 when they went 0-6. So how about that? And of the 7, 4 of the teams were 10-plus losses, including both Monday night games. How bad is that? Really bad right now. As far as other news in the National Football League, trying to gather information, Mike McCarthy says on Aaron Rodgers, he's going to play. Hey, if Russell Wilson can play with an MCL, so can Aaron Rodgers. He finished the game. He'll play this week coming up against Minnesota. The New England Patriots signed Corey Coleman to a one-year contract. He, of course, now is with his third team in the last couple weeks. Bad news out of Carolina. Looks like the Jones fracture that Greg Olsen has, he re-injured it in the game, and so he's not going to get surgery, but he's going to be out for about 3 weeks. And then they probably rushed him back, and they might have done the same thing with their right tackle, Darrell Williams, because he had some patellar tendon problems, and now it looks like he's going to need surgery. So that offensive line now have both tackles. Matt Khalil's on injured reserve, and now you're going to have Darrell Williams probably going on injured reserve. Bad news right now for the Carolina Panthers, who picked up a 16-8 victory over Dallas, but picked up two key injuries on offense. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, under further review, we're going to kind of look back at week one and see what stood out with some of the young guys, what stood out on defense, and what didn't stand out. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, it's kind of interesting as we look back now because I think, you know, in town everybody's all panicked right now about the 27 points given up, the mistakes made by Russell Wilson, the mistakes overall, and the loss in Denver, 27-24, which unfortunately was very predictable. Again, fortunately, I know Jim Moore is always prodding me to make predictions and stuff like that on Danny, Dave, and Moore, but I usually try to stay away from as many predictions as possible. But if pressed for a prediction, I thought they were going to lose. Not by much. I thought I picked like a 17-16 game. Didn't anticipate it was going to be that high with those defenses out there. But you can kind of see it, and you can see that you know, part of the problem had to be the fact that, you know, they were so young. Again, did you ever anticipate they would end up starting two rookies on defense, Trey Flowers and Shaquem Griffin? Will Disley ended up starting out of the two tight end sets and did a great job. They had six, and of course, when you got Colostro out there, he was able to get out there for about 25, 30-some plays. And so they had about six young guys that were out there in their first game, or at least their first major extended role, that was out there trying to, you know, do as much as they can. And those were five rookies and one first-year player. Then you have three players that really had no training camp and no time to really get themselves in football shape, and they did a pretty good job. Deion Jordan out there for 15 plays. You know, they were able to get J.R. Sweezy out there the entire game, and they got, you know, a pretty good game, actually a very good game out of Earl Thomas, even though he made one mistake on one coverage play and got beat for a touchdown. But that's still, I think, that what you can look at is that rookie class. And I think the rookie class, both teams, I mean, I was really impressed with the Denver Broncos rookie from Cortland Sutton, to Bradley Chubb. They really did a good job in this year's draft, and it looks like that's going to help them in the future, and I think it's upgraded their team, particularly with Case Keenum at quarterback for the Denver Broncos. But, you know, the rookies, and I know it was a big subject on Danny, Dave, and Moore yesterday, talking about the rookies in week one and which players among the rookie class impressed Dave Wyman.
I'm not going to give thorns to rookies. For a guy to be out playing like Shaquem Griffin and, you know, all the rest, Rashad Penny, and really Will Disley, I mean, him and the punter, they played really well. But I say that just because I have a hard time remembering his name. Is it Dixon?
Michael Dixon,
because I always think Ed Dixon, but no, that's not him. So I'm just calling him the punter. But those two guys, the punter and Disley, had great games. But, you know, the other guys, they were, I thought of all the rookie guys that played, Trey Flowers did the best. Even though he made mistakes and got beat a couple of times, I loved what I saw out of him, and I think he's going to grow a ton from that game.
I'm going to be cold, ruthless, and really, really mean, because I'm going to give my second thorn to Shaquem Griffin. I'm really hopeful for Shaquem, and I certainly don't think that that's any sort of condemnation on the arc of his career, but I thought he had a tough opening afternoon in the NFL.
Yeah, he did. It looked to me like he got pinned on a force play where he's supposed to turn the running play back inside. It looked like that he was at least involved in that screwed up coverage that ended up being Philip Lindsay that caught a little flat route out of the backfield. Yeah, that one. And then, you know, a couple of times he had coverage on the tight end early on. Early on, I thought it was really good because they were trying to hit those short crossers, and he did some good things, definitely.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, it wasn't his best start, but what do you expect? I mean, again, rookie out there, getting a chance to do it, and of course, You have so many other new players, and communication is going to be an issue. I still remember the one play on the left-hand side where it looked like he was trying to chase down, and then he got caught out of position, and so did Trey Flowers. I thought Trey Flowers accounted for himself pretty well. I thought he, you know, really did well on the run support, particularly coming up on any outside sweep. He was making very good tackles, showing that that safety ability with a combination of the big body and the big tall body can do well in coverage situations. So I thought that was encouraging. Certainly Disley was, you know, it's not like Disley's a surprise, because I think you saw from the beginning of the OTAs, he looked good. And it justified that move to try to get him and make sure that they had him on the roster. And, you know, he looks like he's going to be a very, because he reminds me so much of Zach Miller, the former Oakland Raider number one pick that this team kind of waited for late, signed for about $6.9 million. He can block. He can certainly catch the ball. He can get downfield. And so it looks like what you see right now is a young defense or young core group from this year's draft, some from last year's draft, that I think could really do some good things. When you look and you say, okay, it looks like at time there'll be a starting tight end in Will Disley. I mean, you can see that Trey Flowers from the first look, whether he's there solidly in the first year or not, there's starting ability there. You can see that, Michael Dixon is an absolute amazing, amazing punter. I mean, one of the most exciting punters I think I've seen come into the league in many, many years. I just think, I mean, really, you can, since Johnny Hecker with the Rams established himself as one of the best, I think Dixon's the best punter I've seen since Hecker came into the league. And right now, he's outperforming Hecker. I mean, he's that good. I know on defense, there were some impressive things that on Danny David Moore that Dave Wyman talked about. Let's listen to hear what he said.
A couple guys that I would shout out on defense. One is Shamar Stephen. He's a beast inside. He does a really good job taking on blocks. I saw him take on a double team, and he's one of those guys when, you know, those running backs come up in the line, he's going to stop them right where he hits them. So, you know, I thought he did a really good job. And, of course, Bradley McDougal. Well, it was fantastic. But Shamar Stephen, Jaron Reed, those guys did a good job inside. But there were some run gap problems, too. And somebody actually asked if
Gap Integrity Chicken?
Gap Integrity Chicken came home to roost. It did a little bit.
Did, and so those things have to be tightened up. And we talked to Tom Johnson about that after the game, and that's the one thing that he was saying that they have to work on, is make sure that they just, you know, get the gap intensity. They got to make sure that they get the tackling and all those things are not in sync totally. And then I think, like all teams, particularly when you're going to be playing in Denver on an 84 degree day, you're going to wear down in the fourth quarter if you don't have the lead. They didn't have the lead, and all of a sudden here the Broncos, they get the 4-minute drive, and that's it, ball game over. So now it's tightening things up, getting a few days of rest right now for this team, getting them ready for the game coming up against the Chicago Bears, which clearly has to be a must win. They cannot lose to a Chicago Bear team and think at 0-2 that with the young team that they have can totally turn things around and get it right. Now, again, for one game, you don't overjudge. I think you can see that. I mean, go look at the New Orleans Saints. If you're judging the first two games of the last 4 years, you're going to be thinking the Saints would never make the playoffs. Well, guess what? They made the playoffs last year with 11 wins and did pretty well, but they start off 0-2. They've not had a win in the first 2 weeks of the season since 2013. So, again, as I know Pete Carroll stresses this, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And, of course, we're not close to the finish yet. They just have to play better and tighten some things up. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we'll talk baseball with Shannon Dreyer. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreyer. Mariners open a series at home against the San Diego Padres. And, of course, today is the big return of Marco Gonzalez. And, of course, I think that's welcome in the standpoint that it does look like he get out there. And I don't know, is he going to be on pitch count, or what kind of things do you think that they have in store for Marco?
Well, he is going to be on a pitch count, John. He missed two starts, 16 days, I believe. So they're going to keep him probably around 75. And then I wouldn't be surprised if they keep him on a pitch count the rest of the way. I could be wrong. They could push him a little bit. But the most important thing with him right now is they want to get him to the end of a full big league season. They want him to know what that feels like. And the innings that he gets now are innings that he can build off next year. And it's experience that he will have next year, where when he gets into this part of the season, he can look back and know where he was, what it felt felt like because he did it this year. So I think there is all intent, if he is healthy, which for it appears that he is, and this will be the last step in him getting out on the mound and throwing it 100% and convincing himself that, seeing it for himself. But if he is, then they're going to want to get him to the end of the year. And if there's an innings concern, then I think they probably limit those innings within games. If not, they let him go a little bit.
Then, of course, that's the return, and of course that and I would imagine that's going to couple with a few other roster moves. As you mentioned yesterday, Arkansas season is now ended, and so there'll be some more players coming up from Arkansas to join the 40-man roster and now join this roster, which I would imagine, what is, are we at 35 or 36 right now?
I believe we're at 35 right now, so I think we could get up to 37, possibly even 38. So it's getting very crowded in there. Yeah, but with Arkansas out, a couple of pitchers down there in particular, I would think that we would get another look at Matt Festa. He's been up a couple of times for them this year, but very briefly. Nick Rumbelow was down there too, so I would expect that you would see him as well.
What about Kyle Lewis?
I don't think so. He's not on the 40-man roster.
Right.
And I think, you know, the big thing with him, and this is a positive, is, you know, they moved him. First of all, they got him playing every day, and they got him off of a schedule when he started the year, and when he finally got back into games, you were looking at managing his innings very carefully and managing his appearances and doing things like DHing him and putting him on the corners to take some of the stress off of the legs, giving him frequent off days. And he's finishing the season a full go. And not only is he finishing the season a full go, he's finishing having been promoted to Double A, got off to a rocky start, but his last 2 weeks were fantastic. He put up the Kyle Lewis numbers that I think that you would expect to see. So he is ending his season on an absolute up note. And the other thing is now for the first time since he's been a professional, he's going to go into a regular, normal off season. It's not going to be a rehabbing off season. He can go home, get his rest, and then start preparing like hopefully he's going to prepare for seasons for years and years to come. But he has yet to be able to do that because of the injuries. So, you know, just huge that he was able to get to the end, even better that he was able to end on an up note with the bat. Heard he was stealing a couple of bases. Saw a tweet about a play that he made in the field that was remarkable, and all that suggests that the knee is sound. He has confidence in it, and I think they got him to exactly where they wanted him by the end of the season.
No doubt. So now the motivation is obviously to still try to catch the A's and all that stuff. And, I mean, you know this team is pretty good at working hard at things. I mean, what individual things do you see as they try to regroup here during these final 19-some games?
Well, I think it's the same thing that I talked about kind of with Marco and with Kyle Lewis. There is nobody wants to go into the off season off of, you know, just with a bad taste in your mouth. And it's, you know, it's going to be tough for them with the season. This is a disappointment. You look at where they were 3 months ago and, you know, flying high and hoping that it was going to end in a playoff, looking like it was going to. So it's going to be hard in that regard to know that that just didn't happen. So you want to play in good ball as a team. You want individuals to find some answers and to find some success. For the younger players like Marco, get him through a season. For Ryan Healy, who has had some of his best play since the start of August, keep that going through September. That's something you can turn into the next year. For some of your veteran players who have had some struggles, hopefully they hit on an answer, something that they can work on when they go into the off season. And just kind of everybody has got different individual goals. You hope that they can all end on an up note. If there are guys that need rest, you get them rest now. Edwin Diaz, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. And the good news on Edwin is I know there was a lot of concern about where he was with his innings and his appearances. He's only two innings over and two appearances over where he finished last year. So that, you know, it's not as out of hand as it appeared a couple of months ago. Now what? You know, do you let him go full go through the end of the season, let him go for that record, or do you try and conserve a little bit there, and what does that mean to Edwin? So that's a kind of a tricky one that perhaps you have to manage, and perhaps it's not tricky. Perhaps they look at him and he feels great right now. Just let him go, use him as you normally would. Don't do anything extra. So, you know, a lot of what they're doing right now is geared toward getting him into the off season in good shape and in good mind, and some of it is geared toward next year. How much are we going to see D. Gordon in center field the rest of the way? How much are we going to see Robinson Cano at first base? Is that going to give us a clue as to what they're going to do there? Because those are huge questions that need to be answered in the off season. Do they have their answers already, or are they still figuring that out? We might see some indicators of that.
No doubt. And, of course, that's you know, the big thing to kind of sort out here, too. I was kind of curious. We're almost at that one-month mark since the return of Robinson Cano. I know that the bats have been inconsistent, but how do you kind of review how Robinson Cano is since coming back from his 80-game suspension?
Just kind of look at the numbers and you look at the situation. It's been a very different situation for him. He said he was up for doing whatever it would take to help this team. And moving him around, you know, perhaps that's not his normal routine. And he's been able to do it. The numbers are about where they are, just a tick down kind of across the board for him. Nothing alarming. And, you know, some of that is getting back into it, having not seen live pitching for, you know, the better part of 3 months. And then some of it, it's a restart. And sometimes he's not there right at the beginning. But you also take a look and see where he's at and what he needs to figure out by the end of the year. I think that he's handled the moving around. I think that it's been interesting watching him at first and third base. First base, I think, is more of a challenge. There's more that you need to know about footwork, about where you go on a pop-up, about relays. I think third base was a little bit more instinctual to him. He looks like Robinson Cano when he's at second base, and that's a good thing. So I think that what we're seeing from him right now is kind of similar to what you would see from him at the beginning of a season, plus the added challenge that he is having to look at the lineup card every day to see where he's playing.
No doubt. And that's, a tough year in the sense that the 80-game suspension set everything back a little bit. But, you still have to battle through, and the guy is an absolute professional in how he hits. Nelson Cruz, I know, continues to be such a valued. How is he kind of holding up with his back, with his legs, and all that? Because, as you get older, it's a little bit tougher. You know how hard he works. You know what a great thing he does. How's he holding up?
Holding up relatively well. I mean, I know that he's had to deal with all sorts of different things and dents throughout the season, but I look back to a couple of games ago when you saw him, you know, stretch a double, whereas if he was hurting, he would have stopped at first base and then score from second base on a ball that was hit to shallow left, and he had a great read on it. But if he's protecting anything, particularly at this time of the year, although I think at that time perhaps there was a little bit more hope, maybe he was, you know, he definitely was showing something going for it, but he was able to. So I think all things considered, I think he is in pretty good shape. And for the most part, you know, there were some things that were a little bit self-inflicted, you know, fouling a ball off the ankle and things like that. I think that he's held up remarkably well this year.
Yeah, because he's such a professional, and that's why you like to find a way to see to bring him back. And, of course, as we talked about yesterday, Mitch Haniger continues to do such great things. The that carryover from, I guess, if he finishes the season like he's continued, that's got to be a good thing for next year.
It is, and I think that's just such a good thing for the Mariners. And just to watch him, you know, we got a lot of answers about Mitch Haniger this year. I think we had some feeling about what he could be, and we saw some glimpses, but having not played a full season because of injuries last year, you know, this is his first full major league season playing start to finish. And we saw when he had a struggle, we saw how he got through it, we saw what he was able to do even when he was struggling and getting on base. So, you know, I think that this hopefully, you know, kind of sets the mark for him just to build off of, and that is a very, very high mark.
No doubt. He's played so well and done that. Any adjustments you see happening in the bullpen? Because I know they've got more bodies right now to use. They still seem to be struggling to figure out who that seventh inning guy is.
I think right now it's interesting because you did see Zach Duke come into a big situation in the game 2 days ago. And before that, you saw, you know, Sean Armstrong has been leaned on quite a bit since he's come up. And you can tell they're trying to figure out what he is right now. So I think that they are always looking for arms down in that bullpen. And right now I think it's more kind of a situation of almost auditions and getting up close looks in situations right now with him. They certainly have a ton of arms right now, and that Festa comes up. I'm assuming he's coming up. It'll be interesting to see how they use him because this is a young player, and they've had pretty nice history of bringing up young players from the minor leagues into the bullpen. How much do they use him? What do we see from him? Is he going to be a big piece of the bullpen next year? Could he be part of the seventh inning solution? So, you know, important spring or important September for those young relievers that are down there.
Shannon, as always, we thank you so much. And a 2-game series coming up against the Padres. We'll be listening tonight.
Thanks, John.
Shannon Dreher joining us on the Venue Kings hotline. We will come back and we'll start to get into further review as we go on a National Football League. I guess Tuesdays are injury days because you start to figure out, okay, who gets hurt on Mondays. Obviously, Fridays are bigger injury days. We'll get into that. We'll also talk about the first-year coaches and how bad they did. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And, of course, it's time to go behind the lines here. And on Tuesday, checking out the major injuries. And, of course, everybody's waiting to find out, you know, where it goes on Aaron Rodgers. And we all know the results. He's going to play. I can't imagine him not playing. I mean, he comes back and finishes the game. Does an incredible comeback, 24-23. So how can he not play? And I would imagine, I know it's an MCL. I don't think he's done any further damage to it. We watched Russell Wilson play the entire season. I mean, he had the high ankle sprain in week one in 2016. Got the even more, I mean, the Russell Wilson injury on the MCL was worse than what Aaron Rodgers had, because I think Aaron's probably a one or a two sprain on that. So the fact that Russell was able to bounce back, and I think the same thing that you're going to see, I just think, you know, he's going to play. He's just too valuable, too important, and I think that he's going to fight through it and do a good job as best as possible. So I think you can count on that. Carolina Panthers in bad shape. They find out today that, two guys that they probably rushed back for the opener against Dallas now are going to miss a significant time. You know, Darrell Williams, who had a problem with his patellar tendon. You know, they thought that they were going to need surgery. Now they played him. He re-aggravates the injury, and now he does need surgery. Bad blow for them because, you know, their left tackle, Matt Khalil, he's on the injured reserve list. So now they're down two tackles. That is going to be absolutely devastating for an offensive line that lost, you know, one of their best guard in Andrew Norwell. So, no, I think that they're early in trouble. They suffered big. Tennessee Titans. They could be in trouble, too. They lose Delanie Walker for the season, broken ankle. So he goes on injured reserve yesterday. Now they're waiting to find out about Marcus Mariota and find out about Jack Conklin. Now, remember, Conklin's coming back from an ACL injury. Didn't really do a lot in training camp. Then gets a bad concussion on what was a bad hit on him. So now they don't know about his status, and they don't know about the elbow injury that's affecting Marcus Mariota. So that's one to kind of keep watch on. So those things are just, and of course, you start to look at now the other thing as far as non-injuries, the first-year coaches. You know, everybody was excited about coming in and getting John Gruden down in Oakland. And, you know, John Gruden, the coach, is going to do a good job. But John Gruden's also the general manager. And you kind of wonder, is that going to go well? And right now it didn't. I mean, they lose by 20 points, 33-13. They trade away perhaps their best player or one of their best players in Khalil Mack. And he has a monster game against the Green Bay Packers. And you just kind of figure out, what are you doing? So now I think that they could be in deep, deep trouble in the sense that, now they could really hurt losing, and then not knowing if their defense is going to be very good at all. Did seem like they totally ran out of gas in the second half. But the first-year coaches, 0-7, how incredible is that? I was like, Maura, you would think that this was not going to be the case, but 0-7? Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's pretty bad. And the fact that that hasn't happened in so long, and last time it was 0-6. But when you take a look at some of those teams, I mean, I don't know. Detroit's been bad for a while. The Raiders have been underperforming for a while. I'm trying to think if there's any teams that we thought that these coaches were going to come in and do really well in.
Yeah, no, it's like, you think they would, but, you get a job, you know, based on the availability of the team. And, of course, if the team is going to go out there and, usually you get jobs because there's problems. And I guess the problems carry over and some teams didn't improve. I thought the worst job, without question, was done by Matt Patricia. I mean, he looked lost out there,
yeah,
didn't he?
It was awful.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they were terrible on defense. They certainly were awful in the sense that everybody knew, at least the Jets were claiming, they knew every play that they were running. How bad is that?
Well, and that's one thing. If they did their film study and they knew a lot of your tendencies, that's one thing. But to not make adjustments as the game goes on, that's unforgivable.
No question. No, and that's, they just didn't make the adjustments. And, then I thought Matt Nagy did a good job. But then you think about it, his team blew a 20-point lead in the second half. And actually, it was 23-3. And he had, Matt Khalil and all those resources on defense. Still, I thought he did a good job with Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, he probably did the best job of the new coaches. Yeah. You just have to go up against Aaron Rodgers, who even on one leg can pull off miracles, and that was a tough one for them.
Wasn't that amazing what he was able to do? I mean, Aaron Rodgers is just absolutely freakish how good he is.
I do think Randall Cobb didn't get quite enough credit for being elusive on that score.
Yeah.
He did a really good job as well. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, the Bears were up by 3 points and driving, and somehow it felt like they were behind.
Yeah.
Because you just, with a few minutes left, you can't give Rodgers the ball like that.
No, and that was kind of amazing to kind of watch all that. But, yeah, it was a real crazy first week, I thought. But I thought it was a good first week. I mean, certainly the key was that Green Bay game. The Green Bay game was so special and so good that, that I think captivated everybody. I mean, certainly you did see some bad football. But overall, I thought it turned out to be a little bit better than most people expect. But really, when you think about the big picture of all this, is that, what you're looking at is that these teams are pretty much almost like in the third preseason week. That's where they really are as far as, trying to justify how good they can be and all those things.
Yeah, it's rough. And you said that with the Rams sitting out most of their players in the offseason. And I think it showed in the fact that it took them till the second half to really start looking like the Rams team that everyone expected. Mm-hmm. And I still think they're probably going to get better. It was definitely a rough start for them.
Oh, no doubt. And they've got to try to figure out a way to either fix that up. But, first half 13-13, and then everything just unleashed in that second half, and that looked good. Tennessee, I thought, struggled. I mean, I think that, of course, now, I don't know if you can really judge anything when you have the craziness that happened with the weather. I mean, with the fact that you had to wait 4 hours, and then, of course, you lose your quarterback, your left tackle, your tight end. that was good. But, defensively, they really didn't have a lot of answers for what Miami was able to offer on offense.
No, which sounds weird to say, because mm-hmm. that they have not been an offensive juggernaut, and they lost a lot of players as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Landry went to the Browns. So that'll be interesting to see what they really look like. I think you're right. It's hard to tell with that, longest game in NFL history with the delay going on and them having all the injury issues, but it sounds like the Titans aren't really expecting to get a lot of those players back. Mariota is going to try to play, but that sounds bad. He said he couldn't feel his hand and was having nerve issues during the game.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that works out. I'm wondering if they're hoping wishing they would have kept Luke Falk around.
Maybe, because again, if not, they're going to have to go get another quarterback because now they're down to two. And so Falk, I thought, was a good developmental type of quarterback and one that you don't want to go. And ironically, he goes down to Miami. How weird is that?
John, a little bit of Seahawks news here, too. I know you said you were thinking they might bring Keenan Reynolds up with Baldwin hurt. They have just brought Malik Turner back to the practice squad.
To the practice squad?
Yes.
Okay, did they release anybody to make room for him? I'd imagine they had to.
I haven't seen that yet, but I'm sure that probably is coming.
Yeah, I think that it seems like Reynolds would almost be the natural one to bring in, but they have to bring somebody because, remember, they only kept four wide receivers, which was a little bit of a – or five wide receivers, so now they're down to four, not knowing how long it's going to be for Doug Baldwin. Again, figuring it's probably going to be 2 to 4 weeks. And so, it's not that I think that they have to decide you want a bigger guy or not and who's going to work the slot. And I don't think – you can have Tyler Lockett because he's quick and all that stuff, maybe trying to work some of the slot stuff, but I don't know overall if indeed that's going to be the right fit. But it's still kind of fun to kind of watch the way that they're going to fix the roster up. And of course, week one is one where you go out and you might want to go for a veteran. I wonder if they want to go out and bring in a veteran cornerback. I mean, for example, Deshaun Shedd is out there. I wonder if they bring him back. Do they bring somebody that was a pass rusher cut from some place and a veteran? I don't know. I think those are going to be some of the things that they're going to have to look at over the course of the next day or so. But yeah, it's Tuesdays, particularly after week one, very busy roster days in the National Football League. Hey, you can check out my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. The M's take on the Padres tonight at 7:10 on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up next, we go four downs with Sean Salisbury.